Evening, ladies and gentlemen, trees and non-binaries, to another exciting episode of I Am the Night, the weekly show here on DC Comics News, where I, Adam Ray, and my charming father, Stephen Ray, bat expert, talk about arguably the single strongest ingot of Batman media, the classic 90s animated series. We're getting close to the end of the run, which breaks my heart, but we still have many iconic stories to talk about. This one was a good look at the Bat family with a lot of hair-raising action. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Very good. Good pet on the back there. This one was different because I guessed a ton of it, but I didn't guess a ton of it, and I loved it. But we're going to... This is Animal Act, episode 16 of season 3. So it's Stone Cold episode 316. Ooh. Hell yeah. Of Batman the Animated Series. And our 94th episode, the countdown to 100, gets closer. But before we get there, because episode 100 we've already worked out was going to be Mad Love, but at the time of this recording, we just had the heartbreaking news that a lady we've talked about so much on this show, the original Harley Quinn, Arlene Sorkin, passed away this week. Huge condolences to everyone who knew her, everyone who worked with her, friends, her family, her loved ones. But we will have a full-on tribute to her when we record Mad Love, because according to many, it's her finest hour, and if it's anything like the comic, it most definitely will be. But anyway, rest in peace, Arlene. We love you and we always will. But let's talk about a different villain, a different kettle of fish entirely, with Animal Act. Adam, your first thoughts on the opening and the appearance of an old friend?
The old friend was very well hidden throughout the episode. Nice surprise to see them somewhat pop up, but definitely welcome indeed. It reminds me of the honest trailer as done by the fine people at Smosh on YouTube, saying that one of the biggest antagonists in the Batman animated series is just a bat menagerie's worth of animals. And we see the bat menagerie's worth of animals give Batman and his two charming sons a great deal of strife, and we have to wonder how well trained these critters are. But of course we know that it's all done by hypnotism and mind control, and there's only one grand hypnotist mind controller out there in Batman's Rogues Gallery. But we're getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves, because I think even though that reasoning was very obvious, that was not the focus of the story. I think we can talk a lot about the dynamic of Nightwing and Batman in this story, because this is a lovely return appearance of Dick Grayson, Bloodhaven's truest guardian, and we get to see how different and changed their dynamic together is, isn't it?
That was, for me, that the whole impetus of the show was Bruce and Dick reunited, the original dynamic duo, and even though the relationship is strained, there's tension there. The respect and the way they work together is unmatched and unparalleled. But yeah, like I said, we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves, because from the beginning of the episode, which is so brilliantly directed by Kurt Gaeder, again, another brilliant episode written by Hilary J. Bader, who's come out of nowhere to become one of my favorite Batman writers. This lady's incredible. But there's Tim and Bruce on the rooftop watching out for some kind of burglar, and a shadow appears, very Batman-like, very stealthily. The Batman says he heard him a couple of rooftops away, and it's Nightwing. And props to Lauren Lester, because we always talk about Kevin Conroy, quite rightly. But Lauren in this episode, for me, really stood out, because he was clearly the same Robin we've known for years, the Robin from Batman the Animated Series. But he sounded more mature, more adult, more grown up, more laid back, but still recognizable. And it's a brilliant piece of voice acting from him in this episode.
True masters of the voice acting craft really know how to chameleonize and like twist their thing. The slightest little bit of intonation and the slightest bit of like tenor and bass here and there, and they can completely change their whole sound. It makes me think of that one scene in Mrs. Doubtfire featuring the late great Robin Williams, where he's like, I do voices, and then Robin Williams does about 6 minutes of Robin Williams things. That obviously is a master of the craft, but still, any voice actor worth their salt can twiddle things and their voices into a whole new sound. But to be able to make yourself sound similar but still very, very different, to show age, time, maturity, a bit of world weariness, but still have the same lights that Dick Grayson was always known for. It's a really hard thing to pull off. And we get that in from this performance in the forefront of the episode, because not only is this the return of Dick Grayson as Nightwing, it's also the return of Haley Circus, one of my favorite settings in all of DC.
I'm so glad you said that, because again, when it's revealed, so what happens is Bruce, Tim and Dick are watching out for this burglar. And as soon as Batman engages him, like superhuman levels of strength, I think, oh, a meta? What's going on? But then as soon as they land on the roof, I thought, oh, hang on, that's not a meta. That's an animal, a gorilla. And of course, Animal Act is the name of the episode. And this creature gives all three of them a pounding, because obviously they're thinking they're dealing with a human being. But when Dick unmasks the creature and it's a gorilla and he recognizes it and says, Peaches, I think, hang on, he recognizes the gorilla. Circus animal. Haley's, and my heart leapt. Brilliant. I mean, you said it. Haley Circus is legendary in comics lore. The fact that even today in Tom Taylor's Nightwing run, Dick's named his pet dog, his gorgeous, good girl, three-legged pet dog, Haley, Bitewing. Amazing.
It's a part of his past that's so fundamental and true that I don't think anything can shake it. And you can reimagine Dick Grayson's origins in lots of different ways. I've seen him tangle with Tony Zucco in the original canon. We've seen him tangle with the Falcones and the Maronis, and even the Batman Forever, where Two-Face was responsible for the death of his parents. But in every situation, he was always part of the flying Graysons of Haley Circus. So that part is still so incredibly consistent, and it really can't change. But then again, in DC Comics, Haley Circus is iconic because that's also where one of my favorite creepy characters, Deadman, came from.
Exactly. They both worked in the same circus. And Deadman's troop, I think, took over from the Flying Graysons, if memory serves. So huge connection there. Absolutely brilliant. It's just Dick's back, and the way the relationship is handled is brilliant. It's a rivalry, it's a relationship, it's father and son, it's partner and ex-partner. And I'm so glad it's addressed. I mean, I know it's just over halfway through the final season, but it's addressed. And then it's addressed as partners again throughout the episode, and it's masterfully handled.
It's a partnership, but I'd say there's a lot of tension there, naturally so. I think the break for Dick to go solo was a bit more amicable towards the end, but right at the beginning there was a lot of heated tensions, and that's what we're seeing here. But I think it's also really interesting that we get at least a couple of moments of the partnership between Dick and Tim, old Robin and new Robin, because it makes more sense for the two of them to sort of investigate the circus at first rather than international millionaire Bruce Wayne investigating the circus. So we get him trying to like reinsert himself back into the Bat family and in Gotham City investigations, but a lot of it is also him just trying to get back involved and trying to understand where Bruce is now, and him trying to understand, okay, how is he handling himself as a solo crime fighter, not under my care and attention?
Well said. But you don't think also, and it's subtle, it's really cleverly told in the story and not actually put in your face. But like you said, it's Dick and Tim who walk into the circus. Bruce is nowhere to be seen. That to me also means that Batman, even though there is tension, like we've said, with Dick, trusts him. He's let the two boys go into the circus because, A, Tim's very capable, but Dick knows these people. Dick will get more answers out of these people by being himself, by going back on the relationship and the history that he has with them, that any strong-arm techniques or detective skills or Bruce Wayne being a bumbling oaf throwing his money around will ever solve. And that, to me, speaks to a level of trust between Bruce and Dick, even though the tension's there. Or do you think I'm reading too much into it?
No, there is definitely still a lot of trust there. And there's a lot of mutual respect there. So it just makes sense for him to want to have to go and run that himself. It's really refreshing to see that there's still that, even though things are a little bit frosty, I think is the term I used in my notes. It makes total sense. But the tension is still there because there have been times when they've had run-ins with each other and Bruce is still trying to understand how Dick does things as a solo crime fighter. Like he is glad that, like in previous episodes, that he deferred to him with Catwoman's being somewhat inscrutable, but still was a bit weary as to why he was following Catwoman's lead on certain previous episodes. But yeah, there's a lot they need to relearn about each other, which is a nice thing to sort of show in some realism. It's common in the genre for super teams to just sort of like come together, have a little bit of a spat, and then come together to try and defeat the common evil.
Absolutely.
I think it's important for a team with this much emotional history and baggage to have to try and get the read on each other again. So that just makes sense.
And it's lovely as well, because you say that's a very common trope in comics, absolutely. But it's just so much better when it's not just like two random characters thrown together for a team up, when it's family, when it's, to all intents and purposes, a father and son relationship, which you and I know extremely well, but thankfully have never fallen out. You've never left and gone and traveled the world to learn capoeira to kick people's butts. But or maybe you have and I just don't know about it.
Not my speed. If I was going to go solo, I'd do more of the Oracle thing, trying to be the one behind the screens.
Definitely more you.
Yeah.
But it's great when he gets back to the circus, because obviously, immediately, and this is the one bit I didn't guess, because obviously I saw when the gorilla was stealing a microchip at the beginning, I think, oh, yeah, this gorilla's far too smart, far too well-trained. Mm-hmm. And when they go to the cave and watch the video footage, I said, yeah, this is Hatter. But then they throw in the curveball of Dick's childhood friend and fellow circus member, Miranda Kane. Now, Kane is a very popular surname in the DC world, obviously after Batman co-creator Bob Kane. But it's also Bruce's mother's maiden name. So do you think maybe this Miranda is a distant relative of Bruce's?
Potentially. I'd have to be a very distant relative, because the Canes were still very influential back in the old days of Gotham and their connections to the court and all of that secret society stuff. But unless I'm mistaken. But it's possible. I think it's just a quite a common name that's very evocative of like of Batman deep lore, so it works both ways, I'd say.
Because I thought that there's a physical similarity there as well with the character, the way she's designed and drawn, but maybe it's just wishful thinking and hopefully she'll come back, but you never know. But again, that to me was immediately like, oh, poor old Dixon gets his heart broken, his old friend's the baddie, and she's working with Tetch. But I was wrong. I guessed Mad Hatter, but I was totally wrong about the love interest. And that, again, is good writing.
I was willing to stay hopeful. I think she was a bit too boisterous and a bit too proud of her animals to put them in harm's way like that. And to be honest, like, it makes sense for her to have been Tetch, but I was pleasantly surprised. But given the sort of look of the of that part of the mime clown, it makes sense for it to have been him. And yeah, it worked both ways. You were pleasantly surprised and sort of wanting it to pin it on a new character. I was willing to trust this new character, which is why, even though the stories are so condensed and small, experienced fans of Batman lore can still find different messages from it and have different takeaways from it. So that, to me, sort of adds to the great level of longevity and power that this show always has.
Absolutely. It's just terrific storytelling. Case in point, obviously after the gorilla, when Bruce and Dick as Batman and Nightwing head into the next robbery site, it's two great big bears. And again, subtle, but Dick kicks this barrel and the bear just jumps on it and starts walking on it. And that's like, that's vintage circus training. So that's even more of a clue. So that led me to believe, oh, God, maybe Miranda actually definitely is involved. But little subtle hints like that. And you said they fit all this into 20 minutes. And it just works. It's not rushed or forced. It just works.
Yeah. It also really rewards repeat viewing, repeat understanding. Because, like we were saying, it makes sense for Dick to go in and do the boots on the ground, off-mask investigation work in the circus. But he goes around and talks to everybody. He talks to the strong man, the axe thrower, the lady on the target, and of course Miranda. But he doesn't talk to that clown. If he had, he would be like, oh, you must be new in the circus. And that would be what would give it away. So they thought, like, for me, that would have been a nice clue for us viewers to sort of like, maybe sort of like start to piece it together. But I see why they didn't include that. They didn't include that so that we have more reasonable doubt on Miranda and leave the mystery to be a bit more wide. So that kind of layered, nuanced storytelling, you don't get that in a lot of like mainstream what live action award-winning television. So to get this in 20 minutes, quote unquote, kids TV is so impressive.
But I think, again, that the storytelling goes even deeper. The fact that Dick didn't talk to him is because he clearly puts himself across as mute, as he can't speak. He does the silent laughing. He does everything else. And he does the harmless little trick on Tim at the beginning. So maybe that's a trick Dick's seen before with another clown. He thinks this is just another roustabout, another Joe from the circus. And again, it's just little things like that that we don't immediately think, oh, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Really clever. Really, really clever. So obviously, yep, we both, I guess, when did you guess it was the Mad Hatter? From the microchips at the beginning or a bit of later on?
To be honest, like, I was willing to go along with it being practically anyone, but when he came along, I was like, ah, of course, and it was a pleasant surprise. I also like that he's in slightly more of a muted color scheme for his redesign, but I'm always happy to see him because a part of me always remembers the really strong characterization from Long Halloween where he talks in Alice in Wonderland clothes. Was that from another story? Yeah,
absolutely. But I'm going to show my ultra nerd card here as well. It's brilliant that DC and Marvel have this friendly rivalry, love, hate, respect thing, because this whole shtick with the Mad Hatter controlling the circus animals and using it to get his own way was a trick from one of the great Marvel villains of all time, the Ringmaster in Circus of Crime, where he had a hat with a dial in it and he used to hypnotize people and he used to basically rob them whenever they came to the circus and they'd forget they'd ever been there. And Mad Hatter says at one point, I'm in charge now, you can call me the Ringmaster. And I thought, this is great. This is just lovely. This is just a love letter to every comics fan in the world. And it's not done as a Mickey take or as a finger point. It's done as a real level of love and respect for two great companies who tell great stories. For me, anyway, I thought it was a lovely moment.
See, now, I wasn't aware of that connection. I hadn't heard about that. I just thought it was just him gloating from a point of power, as most supervillains are wont to do. So the strength of the quote works both ways, which I think is really rewarding, really exciting.
Absolutely. I mean, I might be reading totally way too much into it, but the fact that he said, I'm the Ringmaster, and he was using hypnosis and mind control, I just thought, that's lovely. That's just really, really lovely. It might just be me being ultra nerd again.
I mean, like, it rewards people who do know that and do know, like, comics in a wider sense, and it rewards us for a little bit of swashbuckle and melodrama to see
exactly
a supervillain really taking pride in the whole shtick of being powerful and in the circus.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which leads us, of course, obviously, Roddy McDowall, we've spoken about many times, a legendary actor, one of the most recognizable voices in Hollywood history. So obviously we can't talk about him too much. So obviously I was going to talk a lot about Miranda Kane, but of the named credited actors, it's her and one other. And she's actually played by someone we've already talked about a lot. It's returning Jane Wiedlin, who played Bruce's girlfriend Shannon in the Firefly episode.
Oh, wow.
The rock star actress. Yeah. But yeah, so I can't really say much about her because it was only like 4 or 5 episodes ago. But instead, I'm going to blow your mind with a strong man who had 2 lines in this episode, but could arguably be the most decorated and respected and long-standing voice actor, possibly in animated history. You've heard this name. And when I tell you who it is, for 2 lines of dialogue, this is a guy called Corey Burton.
Oh, I do know this name.
You would do. He was the original Shockwave in the entire G1 animated series of Transformers.
Oh, wow.
That's how far back this guy goes. Brainiac in multiple DC animated projects. Zeus in the God of War video game. Hugo Strange in the Arkham City video game.
Oh, excellent. Excellent voice.
Yep, he's appeared in Kingdom Hearts. Cad Bane in every iteration of Star Wars.
Including
Boba Fett, and Mandalorian.
Wow.
Yes, every iteration of Cad Bane. But his Star Wars work does not end there. Going back to the 2D Clone Wars, he's the one who took over from Christopher Lee to play an identical sounding Count Dooku in every single episode of Clone Wars. He also played Dale from Chip and Dale for decades. He was the mole, the French funny character in the Atlantis animated movie, which you loved as a child.
I still love that movie.
Yep. He was Scarecrow in the Batman Gotham Knight animated film and has appeared in Batman the Brave and the Bold, Justice League, you name it. This guy's been in it. Voice acting royalty for two lines in an episode of Batman the Animated Series.
I mean, just saying that he was Shockwave from G1 Transformers, like Megatron and Starscream can like jog on. Soundwave and Shockwave are my favorite Decepticons easily.
Absolutely.
It's because if the two of them actually ran the Decepticons, they'd have won the war centuries ago.
Yeah.
So just an actor of that pedigree to be able to give that kind of like erudite sounding intelligence, but that kind of robot sinister callousness, but then has the range to be all of those kinds of light characters and this guy with a recognizable but still natural sounding Eastern European accent, because he has that kind of range to be able to sound like Christopher Lee of all people.
But
and they get him in for like three minutes of this.
Or maybe this was already the entire Andrea Romano effect where, hey, Andrea, I've got half an hour for you. You haven't got a spot on Batman the Animated Series, have you? Sure, come on in.
You sure you're okay with being this bit part? Yeah, I'm fine, but you've done all this work. Oh, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Legend. Legend. Yeah, I can see your little eyes going, what is happening?
God, I'm watching the Atlantis movie now.
Yeah, it's such a good film. But the fact that Cad Bane in everything, absolutely everything, right up to the Bane, right up to the moment he meets his maker in the Book of Boba Fett, superb.
Wow. Pleasant surprises. They get some of the best when you least expect it.
The best. So I was going to be talking about Miranda Kane, but no, we already talked about her. She's awesome. She's great. And she's back. Well, clearly she's great. She's back three or four episodes later. So
I bet you looked through the credits and you just sort of went, okay, I'll look into her. Corey Burton. I know that name. I'll look in a second. How big could they be? And then just like, wait, and just kept scrolling.
As soon as I saw Corey Burton, I thought, oh, why is he credited? He had two lines, but obviously, hang on, Corey Burton, I knew the name. But more from the Transformers and the Batman side of things. He's been in so much stuff.
So much stuff.
But while your brain cools down, tell me about what you took away from Animal Act.
Well, we saw... I love this episode simply from like the perspective of it being like a Dick reintroduction, Dick Grayson reintroduction. And this look at Haley Circus weirdly gave me an amazing sense of realism. There was one detail about some of the parts about Haley Circus sort of that I thought, wow, that makes total sense. In that final confrontation when he's fighting all of the circus performers who are under Tedge's mind control, we see the fire breather guy. But the fire breather guy is there in a blue suit with a big old cowl and a cape and a fire symbol. It makes total sense in a world full of superheroes for the people that work in the circus to have similar sort of costuming and style garb. So, like, it's those little details that, like, the art team clearly just had a lot of fun with, but it just makes sense when you stop for a minute and think about it. I've played Dungeons & Dragons and tabletop role-playing games for a long time, but truly excellent world building should feel effortless like that. And that was something that just like really excited me. It was beautiful to see.
Hive mind in full effect. That was the big takeaway for me. Just the return to Haley Circus. It's in Dick's DNA. This is the heart and soul of the performer that he is. And this is why he's such a completely different crime fighter to Batman. Because Batman doesn't want to be seen. Batman doesn't want to be the showman. Batman wants to get in, hit, get the job done. And it was particularly beautiful when, for a while, Batman was missing, presumed dead, and Dick was Batman, and Damien was Robin. And Damien is a murderous, psychopathic little monkey at this point. And we had a showman, fun Batman that even the police loved, and a dark, brooding Robin, which is a complete reversal. So seeing Dick, seeing Haley Circus as a Bat nerd, to me, it just did my soul good. It was brilliant. It was wonderful. And that same takeaway, the whole Haley Circus thing added a layer of depth and connection. And like you said, brilliantly, realism. to the whole state of affairs. So again, I've already convinced, even with a few more episodes to go, that there has never been a bad episode of Batman Animated Series. It's just clear. They love the show too much. Every single person who made it.
Everyone who made it wanted to give their best in terms of look, design, voice direction, voice casting, sound editing. Everything adds up to an ingot of Batman media that's as strong as the comics that they came from.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why 25 plus years later, it's still standing the test of time, and fine, proud nerds like us can still talk about it with a lot of love and care.
Because it's just that good. Speaking of good, your work, wonderful stuff. So I think you should tell our viewers and listeners what it is and where they can find it.
Find things made by little old me. You can look in a great many places. For DC Comics flavored things, look no further than Dark Knight News. I review multiple titles a month. Both Catwoman right now is in an excellent spot, and the new and hotly anticipated Batman Beyond Return to Form is doing very well indeed. But for my one true love, PC and tabletop gaming, look no further than our pride and joy, fantasticuniverses.com, where I try to keep my utmost on anything to do with Dungeons and Dragons, collectible trading card games, whatever PC games that are tickling my fancy, and anything can be found on every console under the sun. Look to Twitter at isittinkerer above me to have a nice chat with me. I'm very approachable and very polite. And look to twitch.tv/isittinkerer, where I'm trying to get back into the groove of things of streaming various card games, collectible card games, including the great DC Dual Force. The next time I stream that, I'm not sure when that's going to be, or it's probably already happened as of the time of you're listening to this. I'm going to make an effort to do Harley Quinn Day on the stream. All my decks will be Harley Quinn and whichever other hero, just to remember, honor, and commemorate the late great Arlene Sorkin, a true talent who will be sorely missed.
Wonderful. Oh, that's made me feel happy. Thank you, Adam. This show and the main DC Comics News podcast are part of the DC Comics News Podcast Network, which you can find on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. And you may see these heroic visages that you see before you now on YouTube. As for myself, just Google search Steve J. Ray or Fantastic Universes, or even Steve J. Ray's Fantastic Universes, for all of my damage across tinterwebs on DC Comics News, Dark News, and of course, our baby Fantastic Universes. You can catch also on Twitter at DC Comics News, at DK Newscom, at Fan Universes. But until you do, you need to remember that Adam Ray is the Knight. I am the Knight, and we are the Knight together, because this is the I Am the Knight podcast.
Thank you for listening, and until next time,
read
more
comics
and watch
much more
Batman.
Batman.